This is Tell Me Something Good About Retail with Bob Phibbs, the Retail Doctor.
Patagonia is a brand that I love, and they do a great job. They understand me and REI, which sells Patagonia. So those are kind of two brands that I spend a lot of money with and have over a significant period of time.
Welcome to Tell Me Something Good About Retail with your host, Bob Phibbs, the champion for a more human connection in retail for over 30 years as a retail doctor. Bob is the authority on brick-and-mortar retail across the world, who works with some of the biggest luxury brands to independent retailers of all sizes.
Today, I'm speaking with Michael Hinshaw, president of M Corp CX. He's also co-author of the best-selling book, Smart Customers, Stupid Companies, Why Only Intelligent Companies Will Thrive and How to Be One of Them. That's a long title. His new book, Experience Rules, the Experience Operating System and 8 Keys to Enable It, co-authored with Diane Magers, has just been released. Welcome, Michael.
Thanks so much, Bob. I'm pleased to be here.
It's wonderful. So you might have decided to do this role 5 years old, but my guess is you decided to come to this passion some other way. So how did you become so interested in the experiences of the customer?
Yeah, actually, I have a master's in design. It's kind of where I started. I'm not going to go back to like the cradle, the 5 years old part of it, of course. But even then, I had a passion for candy stores getting things right.
Hold it. Let's stop that. You have to go back. You can't just leave that, my friend. So what does that mean? Even then, candy stores to get it right.
Hey, you know what? You're 5 years old, at least when I was. I wasn't allowed to eat candy. My grandmother would take me to candy stores my birthday once a year. So it's kind of like, hey, whatever you want. Mom and dad won't let you eat candy or watch TV, but I'll treat you. So yeah, I have a great appreciation for, in Hollywood, California at that point in time, the high-class candy stores that made me feel like I was a big guy.
So. I love that. That's great. Well, so you're not going to go too deep in that. I thought that was kind of a fun little detour.
A little sidebar. Yeah, there's a lot of those. I think we all have them. My background's in design, and I built and sold a brand strategy firm in the late 1990s and was approached by a private equity group to start a company in the internet space, something they knew little about, that I knew little about, that we figured it'd be interesting to do. And they ended up writing me a fairly large check to go into the grain trading business in Canada. So again, right, art guy, lived in San Francisco. And I was like, how do I do this? And so I gathered a team and we went into that market, opened an office in Calgary, kind of the heart of the wheat belt, so to speak. And we talked to everyone. We talked to farmers, we talked to brokers, we talked to traders, we talked to the input providers, the fertilizer, seeds, things like that. We talked to truckers, we talked to buyers. Long story short, we built out what we called relationship lifecycle maps and charted on the map what each of the players in that ecosystem was doing, what their pain points were, what worked, what didn't, and essentially identified a number of different technology solutions that we could bring to bear leveraging the internet to reduce friction, increase value, and to drive greater connections across that ecosystem as a new player. So in a relatively short period of time, about a three-year period of time, we grew to be the largest independent grain trader in Canada. We had about 130,000 acres of wheat under management. And I took a year off, after which my wife had said, the kids are young. You've missed all this stuff because you've been traveling all over North America doing this grain trading thing. You know, you need to stick around for the next little bit, or I might not. So I started M Corp CX 20 years ago, and I used the principles that I essentially created to identify interrelationships and ecosystems to found what was one of the early stage customer experience consulting firms. And I think we're one of the last independent firms still around, relatively small, 35 people. All very senior, all very experienced, and all with a significant passion for making customer experiences and employee experiences better. So
nice.
There you have it in a nutshell. 20,000 feet, 500 miles an hour.
Although that grain story was like, wow, grain, wait a minute. I think we're talking about retail. So what are the most common, I mean, I know what I think are the most common challenges retailers are facing right now, particularly with customer service. I mean, everybody's pissed off in North America and we're stressed out over a geriatric presidential campaign and inflation is high and, you know, everyone's scared. So we walk into a store, but what are the common challenges that retailers face in actually improving or changing that experience to something to the better?
Yeah, well, one of the, I'd say the most common issue that the retailers we work with face is the reality that retail is no longer just a physical store, right? There's human interactions that occur in the store. There's human interactions that occur online, on the phone. There's human interactions that occur in an entirely digital environment. There's digital interactions that occur without people or stores at all. And you got to figure out as a retailer, how do you blend all this stuff together? Because lots of times the purchase journeys will start online and they might finish on the phone and or in store. And one thing, I was talking to a client yesterday, and she said something that really I hadn't heard before, but really struck a chord with me. She said, nothing pisses a customer off more than when you get corporate amnesia. I was like, what do you mean by that? She said, well, you go online and they learn all these things about you. And then you call support and they're like, hi, who are you again? And then you go in the store like, oh, hi, who are you? What do you want? And she said, it's like that Groundhog Day thing where the company keeps forgetting who you are and you got to re-educate them every time. And so what we see is probably the biggest challenge is being able to optimize, link, and provide continuity across those various channels.
And I would say, and not freak us out that you know that, because I could see the other side of that as well. I walk into the store and it's like, yeah, I purchased a pair of shoes. Oh, those are the 8D Allen Edmonds. Yeah, we saw those in the tan. And yeah, looks like you also got the socks. And you're like, so.
It's like, what don't you know? Yeah, or you have a conversation with a friend, you know, on a mountain bike ride about something you're interested in buying, and then you're getting ads for that thing on Instagram that night. It's like, okay, that ain't cool. I don't know how you did it, but you're freaking me out.
Right. I think you highlighted a great point that we say personalization would be great. You know, I could see a world where I remember Ralph Lauren, his son, was leading up the digital initiative and said our stores will only be bespoke in the future. And I'm like, yeah, that'll never happen. Well, then AI happens. And just imagine if you got a, instead of that 20% off, you know, like most retailers send, if it said, hey, Bob, this is your closet and we think these three would be something you really love. And it really was to me, right? So that's the key. It was something only I got in the color choices. I think that would be phenomenal. But the amount of data you would have to connect to deliver on that, I think that's the challenge, right? That people can see how cool some of it would work, but at what cost would that do to be to deliver it? And would that be enough to make you the retailer of choice? Answer all of that, please.
I think that a big chunk of that is, you know, going back to the creepy factor, transparency, right? It's weird when you don't know what happened or why. It's weird when, you know, you sign a consent form for your data to be used, but it's in subparagraph 14B of a 19-page online form that always just click accept without bothering to read all the BS. But if you're able to, as a retailer, to communicate transparently what is you're doing and why, then the creepy factor goes away. And in fact, instead of having it being a strange transaction, it becomes relevant, right? And relevance is critical. So many times you see that, you know, ads are being served or you have experiences on the web that are just absolutely irrelevant to what you're trying to accomplish. So to the degree that retailers can, in both an in-store and in digital environments, increase personalization, which doesn't just mean, you know, dear Bob on the email, right? It's actually connecting things up. And one of our employees, Taylor, tells a story about Target. And she's a Target, I forget what the phrase is. There's, you know, like a Target club member kind of thing. And she loves that when she pulls into the Target parking lot, that she is served on her phone coupons for those things she buys most often where there's coupons available, right? But she knows she signed up for that. And just getting in proximity to the store, you know, geolocation, it's like, oh, Taylor's going into the parking lot of Target. Maybe she'd be interested in X. And for her, that's a huge benefit. But it's a benefit because she knows she signed up for it. They actually know what she's purchased. They have that purchase history. And they're able to give her relevant, and not just relevant for what her needs are, but relevant for, you know, contextually relevant. Where are you right now? You're in our parking lot. And what is it that you need? So linking those things together, most retailers have all this data. But what they don't do successfully is link that data together in ways that allow them to deliver personalized, relevant experiences to their customers. And, yeah. and data, I mean, you know, data's a mess typically in any organization, even organizations that live by their data. It's hard to get data straight. And that's where the real friction internally comes into play.
Well, especially retailers who cobble together systems from systems, and somebody had a spreadsheet once that has to talk to a Zap that has to talk to somebody else, and everyone's looking around like, who did this? And then, we don't need it anymore.
Yeah, or what does that mean? I don't know.
So you've talked about a little bit about the customer experience. So what about the employee experience? Because, you know, on my Facebook lives and on comments, people are like, oh, people don't want to work anymore. You know, I hire them and they just quit in one day. And I'm always like, well, look at you, because there's probably a reason they don't want to come back. That's certainly it. But I think it does, all of it has to begin and end with the employee experience. Don't you agree?
So back to the data. I was talking to a call center manager, I don't know, a month or so ago. And they said that their customer service reps to answer, you know, the most, you think about distribution curve, to answer all of the most common questions that customers ask, have to interact with 9 systems.
Wow.
And so as an employee, I could see you pretty quickly going, this is because people get upset and, you know, they think you're having to go off and get permission someplace else. But back to your point, employee experience is critical. And so we look at improving access to systems and information. We look at it through 2 lenses. The lens of how do you make it easier for your customers to self-serve, and how do you make it easy for your customers to interact with, reach a human and solve their problems if they're unable to do it themselves? Because, you know, digital first, but not digital only world. No one wants to talk to a person until they want to talk to a person. Then they want to talk to a person right now, right? So the flip side of that is for the employees, if you're able to connect somebody successfully to an employee, and that employee and, you know, the call centers or online sales or whatever your, you know, however your departments are organized, and that person can't quickly link back to that, the buyer, you know, the buyer history, knowing what they've ordered or returned or, you know, those kinds of basic things, and they can't help you answer questions without having to go to 9 different systems. It costs the company money. It frustrates the employee and it frustrates the customer. So you got to look at customer facing systems and systems that support employees who face customers.
Yeah. And I think that's the key. I mean, I think so many people have gone into bots now and they think that's great. Or my God, voicemail, my call my CVS because I need to have my prescription. It's about 10 miles up, but I'm like, I thought these are always, you know, I told you just send them always, but invariably it comes back and, you know, it's waiting for you. So you try to call CVS, dear God, the phone prompts from hell, like 9 buttons that go to 9 buttons that go to 5 buttons that tell you about your CVS card that go to, you know, they're busy, please hold, that either hangs up or something else. And I just think, is this helping? Because I can hear someone thinking, oh, this would be great. It'd be great. They'll self-serve. And it's like, will they? Because
yeah, or will you just piss them off?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it's like you did the CVS register tape to me on your voicemail. And I think the promise of AI is going to be generative AI will be able to understand us and we'll be able to come up with exact native language to us. But we're a long way from that right now, I think. So, you know, to your point, if I have good customer service, I think so many people say, oh, my customers all love me. And it's like, I don't care if your customers do. It's those new people. And then they'll say, well, I've got a net promoter score. And I was like, yeah, I can't think of a time I've ever filled that out unless I'm pissed off. And then I fill it out, right? I'm not raving about like, oh, CVS, they got it so well. I'll go back. We don't do that. So,
well, in fairness, CVS is now the only option we have here in my area. And I don't think anyone raves. So, I mean, I hate in my business, I kind of hate to name names, but that's one of those experiences that is so consistently subpar that it's really hard to put a smiley face on it.
Yeah. And so how do you measure success for customer experience without your, you know, net promoter score? Look how great we are. You know, most times I see people, they're like bragging it's at 83 or 84 and it's right in there. And I'm like, okay, but is that really the measure? Because to me, great customer service is going to lead to great sales or word of mouth. So there's so many more ways we can measure that now than just I have a feeling, right?
Yeah. And NPS has And it is kind of a religious conversation. You bring up MPS because there's, you know, an entire camp that believes that that is it. And it's a wonderful metric for board of directors, right? It's like, oh, it's up. That's great, right? Makes everyone happy at the executive suite level. But operationally, it's, in my opinion, my experience, NPS is one of those scores. It's akin to you're being dropped in the desert on a road, or maybe you're at a crossroads, but there's a sign that says you are here. What that sign doesn't tell you is how you got there or where you got to go from there. So it's nice to know that you're at 84, but it doesn't really help you if you don't understand what went into that and what you need to do to improve that. And to your point, exactly, NPS is a long ways from sales.
Yeah, I think, yeah. So we'll get out of the drugstores there for a minute. And if you could give me one piece of advice on a new retail brand about building a loyal customer base through exceptional experiences, what would that one tip be for a brand new retail brand?
Understand your customers better than anybody else.
And how would they do that? You're a brand new company. Jane's got an idea. She's going to be the next cosmetic whiz or...
So one of my passion projects, I'm a teaching fellow at UC Berkeley at the Haas Business School. It's a public university here in California. And I work with entrepreneurs around customer experience, entrepreneurship, and innovation. And the question you just posed is exactly the question that every one of the teams in these MBA classes is trying to answer. How do we understand our customers better than anybody else so that we can dominate a market, eliminate an existing pain point, you know, smooth the process, reduce friction, et cetera, et cetera. And what we see, and I'm just saying at a very micro level, right, which is call it a five-person founding team for a venture. There's a great idea. And that idea is generally based on personal experiences of the founders or some subset of the founders. And they're not wrong. They're rarely wrong, but often when they go out and actually talk to those customers, right, and are able to test ideas with them and learn more, they pivot, they change, they shift. And the more customers you talk to, the more you pivot, change, and shift. And when I say pivot, change, and shift, it doesn't mean you're going 180 out from where you started. Sometimes those changes are incremental, but the more you know, we say, how do you do it? Literally talking to customers. It could be a one-on-one, it could be groups. We did a fairly significant project at SFO, San Francisco International Airport, here in San Francisco. And we're trying to help figure out how do you know, increase both satisfaction, guest satisfaction with the journey, and how do you increase their hang time in the retail environment at the airport. And then those things are directly related, because if you come into that environment stressed, you're not going to be comfortable sitting down. If you're late, you're not going to be comfortable in the stores, the restaurants, right? And we brought in groups of business travelers, groups of family travelers, and, you know, groups of leisure travelers, and worked with them to figure out their high points and their low points. So it's like, you know, as running exercises and things, saying one-on-one. And then we take that data and we extrapolate it, we extend it, we confirm it by doing, you know, more rigorous quantitative surveys, so that we know the data is grounded in not just perspective, emotion, and opinion, but also grounded in fact. So we can relate certain perspectives to certain behaviors. And that's one of the, as you talk about customer experience, and I'll tie it back to data and to sales in the retail environment, you want to understand what is it that you do as an organization? You know, what are you doing to customers is what customers say sometimes. How do they feel as a result of what you do to them? And that's that, you know, did this feel good? Does it feel bad? Was it easy? Was it hard? And then unsurprisingly, based on how customers feel, they'll do things, their behaviors. And those behaviors can include, you know, greater share of wallet, increased purchase frequency, you know, greater loyalty. They can also include, you know, decreased purchase frequency, leaving, and whatever your customers do, those behaviors drive sales essentially, right? And so you can actually link what you do all the way back up to sales. And that middle part, that understanding what customers feel and why, even if it's with your competitors that you're trying to, you know, you want to take market share from somebody as a startup, the better you understand what does and doesn't work with the relationship that that retailer's customers has with that retailer, the better you're going to be able to, you know, design and deliver experiences that are unique and differentiated.
Absolutely. Well, before we continue, we love our loyal listeners, so I'd appreciate if you do me a favor and give me a 5-star rating after this episode, because absolutely, it's all about getting people to rave. And we hope you're enjoying Tell Me Something Good About Retail podcast. And we're going to return after this word from SalesRx Online Retail Sales Training. Hey, it's Bob again. I'm not only your host, but also the founder of the SalesRx Online Retail Sales Training Program. How many sales that should have been yours walked out your front doors today? You know, with shoppers being more discerning about where and when they shop, you need to convert more lookers to buyers. And SalesRx is the perfect solution to make training memorable. It's bite-sized, it can fit easily into your schedules. Don't tell me you don't have time to train. If you can give them time to take a break, you have time for them to train. Now, the training builds from some of the quickest ways to engage shoppers to the most advanced. Everything is planned so you can implement your sales training program with a click of a button. And there's a reason we're on four continents training thousands, because SalesRx is scalable. Everybody learns the same new skills that will grow your sales. In fact, 83% of users report a double-digit increase in their sales within 6 months. Wouldn't you like that to be your story? Visit SalesRx to learn more and set up a call with me to see how we can help. That's SalesRx.com. Now back to the broadcast. All right, we're back with Michael Hinshaw, president of MCorp CX. So your previous book's title was pretty provocative. Can you explain that whole concept behind smart customers, stupid companies, and how businesses can bridge that gap?
Yeah, so I wrote that book 12 years ago, thinking that I had to get it out there really quick because companies are going to figure this stuff out. Good news, bad news. Good news for my business, which is experience improvement, helping companies figure this out. Bad news for me as a consumer and as a retail buyer, and I think for everybody, is the companies have not yet figured it out. But the premise of that is that now that we as consumers have access, I mean, we have the power of, you know, the world's knowledge in our hands at any point in time, right? I mean, how many times in the last month have you seen somebody, have you yourself, or, you know, oh, let me Google that. I mean, this is a fact, a stat, what is it, right? You want to figure it out, it's all right there. Well, today it's being, you know, it's nothing but getting faster and faster and more efficient and greater access to information. And the reality is the customers are moving faster than most companies are. And so when I say smart customer, stupid company, as consumers, because we have access to all this information, it's easier than ever to switch, to move from retailer A to retailer B, you know, because shoes are shoes, right? Or pants are pants, dresses are dresses, cars are cars. You can always go to another source. For companies to be smart, they need to understand that consumers actually have choices. And so I know that sounds like a super obvious thing, and everybody understands consumers have choices, right? But oftentimes companies don't behave like that. It's like the car dealerships that still haven't figured out that making someone buy, that the pressure situation of selling a vehicle isn't actually the best way to get along a lifetime customer. You might be able to sell that one car, but you're not selling that person's friend group, their kids, their wife, or their husband.
I've heard that they say the average new car salesperson they hope will buy one themselves or one their family member and might sell another one before they move on. I mean, so that churn and burn kind of thing, you know, is not like the old days where the caddy dealer would give you, you know, a new one every year. Yeah. I think the loyalty we've shown to our employees has shown through to the customers as well, which makes all of it feel that much more impersonal, right? Yeah. The guy who says, oh yeah, I was in a Bentley dealership a couple of months ago, and the guy's like, oh yeah, I used to sell Mercedes-Benz and Lexus and all this. And I'm just sitting there like, so this is like an every 3 month thing for you, right? Like, and the challenge with that is that transparency doesn't lead to a feeling of confidence. That's what I felt.
Yeah.
That I'm not like, I wasn't going to go buy that car, but I'm just saying in general, when we run into that, right, that in malls, we would find them, we call them mall rats. You know, they used to sell coffee at Starbucks, then they went to Macy's, then yep. They went down to the dress store, they went to the, and I get it, but really, I think what we kind of see in an awful lot of name brands right now is the return to permanence. We yep. really want to see something the same, right?
Yeah, I read something earlier this week. I forget where I saw this, but Patagonia is a brand that I love, and they do a great job. They understand me and REI, which sells Patagonia. So those are kind of two brands that I spend a lot of money with and have over a significant period of time. But what I was reading about, to your point, right, about permanence and getting employees aligned with the organization's vision, right? So you're talking about the car guys who move every 3 months. The dealership management almost certainly is saying customer experience is the most important thing to us. That being said, if you don't sell a car by Friday, you're fired, right? So it's like there's this discordance that you just can't reconcile. There's a cognitive disconnect. It's like, wait, if experience is important, but I have to sell, I'm going to do whatever it takes to make that person take that car off the lot. And I don't care if they ever come back, right? Not my problem. But I bring up Patagonia because the guy who wrote this article basically said, I walked into Patagonia with a Patagonia jacket that was supposed to be waterproof. And I wore it in the rain and it soaked all the way through. So I took it to the store and I said, you know what, this jacket, it leaks. Right? It's not waterproof. And the person in the store, you know, kind of looked, asked me what I do with the jacket, what happened, what the situation was. Anyhow, the article the guy wrote said that this guy in the store, Monty was his name. Monty gave him a new jacket, and he didn't buy that Patagonia jacket at a Patagonia store, by the way. He bought it someplace else, but he got a new jacket. And as Monty's giving the new jacket, Monty says, you know, you might not know this, but in the future with this jacket, you probably don't want to wash it in the washing machine. And if you do, you need to use special detergent and then you need to hang it to dry. You can't put it in the dryer. And the person was like, great, yep. Took my jacket, walked out of the store. And he said, I was halfway to my car when I realized that Monty told me that I was the one who caused the problem with the waterproofing. He did it without making me feel bad. And he said, then I went online to basically write a review about this particular Patagonia store. And he said, I read the reviews. And Monty's name kept coming up. Monty did this, Monty did that. And you think about the ability of an employee who's in an organization for an extended period of time where you build their loyalty, you give them the tools, you give them the authority to do what's right by customers. And customers will continue to come back and say great things about you. But he had a snapshot in the social post, whatever it was, it had four different reviews that said, Monty, 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 Monty. And if Monty's only there for a month, 2 months, 3 months, you're never going to get that kind of loyalty from customers, nor are you going to be able to give customers those kinds of experiences.
Well, Patagonia, my first time seeing one of their stores is they had an A-frame sign in Austin. It's like, don't buy what you don't need. And I'm like, I've never seen a retailer say, don't buy. And I get it. It's part of their ethos. But at the same time, I was in their store and their stuff isn't exactly cheap. And nobody tried to sell anything to me. So I was like, I guess if you're in the cult of it's Patagonia, then, you understand it would be terrible for anyone to talk to you or engage. But hopefully they weren't planning to hire me to do sales training today. So we're going to move on from that. And your new book, which is Experience Rules. We're getting close to the end of our time here. And I know you co-authored with it. What is one or two keys that might be relatable to our retailers listening to today?
Yeah. So the book Experience Rules is based on the concept that customer experience today is anything that delivers customer experience is radically interconnected, right? So with your systems, your data, your journeys, your physical environments, your digital environments, your human interactions, they're all connected across the entire organization. It's a messy web. Most organizations aren't structured that way. Most organizations are structured with the digital channel over here, retail management over here, warehousing over there, marketing over here. And the recognition that it's not separate, we started, I think, talking about that omni-channel journey. That is a key place to start. It's understanding how the pieces fit together. And the way that you do that is, and this doesn't matter if your organization, if you've got, three retail shops or you've got, 10,000 employees in 100 stores, it's understanding how different parts of the organization link together across the customer journey. So you actually understand how somebody starting a journey online, finishing, or maybe even a midpoint, right, with support, and then going to the retail store and maybe having to return something, all those things are connected. They're not separate. They are separate departments, but from a customer perspective, it's all part of the continuum. They're trying to accomplish a goal. And your job as an organization, as a retailer, is to figure out what are the various points that work well for your customers? What are the things that don't? And get rid of those things. And the places where there's friction, make them better.
Excellent. And you know that whoever that person is that you're looking at, that's the brand. Whoever you left on, one of my clients one time was asking, like, how do you know a good employee? I said, it's real simple. Would I give them the keys to my new car? And she goes, wow, that's a high mark. I go, yeah, it's really kind of it. And I think nowadays, we're just happy someone shows up and is like, here's the key to my new car. I'm out. I'm going to do anything else. So, well, it's been a delightful time with us together. The name of the show, Michael, is Tell Me Something Good About Retail. So kick us off with what's one thing that you think is good about retail?
Oh, I have to say that I still am a consumer broadly. And as a consumer, I am seeing, and I do tend to spend my dollars, and I will spend more of those dollars with the stores that understand me and that are transparent with me and treat me with respect. They don't waste my time by doing things like make me go through all those voice trees that you were talking about earlier. And I think I'm not unique in that way. Certainly, if not all consumers fall into that bucket, but most of the folks that I know do.
Yeah, the money is there. And that's a great way for us to leave. Thanks for joining us today, Michael. It's been a pleasure. And those of you who are listening for the first time, you can always go back, and we've got, you know, tens of hundreds of episodes you can hear from some of the greatest thought leaders of today. Thanks again for joining us. And thanks again, Michael. Appreciate it.
That was great. Thanks, Bob.
You've been listening to Tell Me Something Good About Retail with Bob Phibbs, the Retail Doctor. As a listener, you can receive free information and guides when you visit retaildoc.com and sign up for our exclusive weekly newsletter. Thanks for being with us. Remember to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you like to get your podcasts. To virtually bring Bob to all of your crew and associates, check out www.salesrx.com.